You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
Let's talk about the health plan of San Mateo, because this week is very heavy into healthcare. On March 17th, about a week or so ago, they filed notice with the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services after learning an unauthorized party was able to access confidential member information stored in an employee's email account. So it looks like it's a business email compromise. We're talking about names, dates of birth, member identification numbers, and protected health information. They began sending letters as well. So heads up if you are on the health plan of San Mateo. Moving on, let's head on over to Oklahoma City University, because on March 20th of this year, they filed a notice of data breach with the Attorney General of Montana after learning that a cyber attack compromised the security of current and former students and employees, as well as others that have personal information stored within their systems. We are talking about names, addresses, social security numbers, driver's license, state IDs, passports, on and on and on. They're sending out notices as well. So if you're a past, current, or former or future student of Oklahoma City University, plus staff, plus donors, plus whatever, Oklahoma City University is not having a good week. Moving on, let's head on over to the UK and stick with healthcare, because NHS Highland is next up. The Information Commissioner's Office, ICO, in the UK has issued a reprimand to NHS Highland over a, quote, serious breach of trust, end quote, after the health service inadvertently exposed the personal detail of patients likely to be accessing HIV services. Obviously, that's very sensitive information. Now, the incident unfolded when somebody at the organization emailed 37 individuals likely to be accessing HIV services, inadvertently copying their email addresses to the CC or carbon copy field as opposed to blind. So it was an email that was sent out. And now, basically, if you've got HIV services, you know others in your area possibly that have it as well. Never a good look. NHS Highland obviously will be fined. We don't know how much, but heads up to you if you're a patient. Moving on, let's talk about Atlantic Dialysis Management Services back here in the United States. On March 23rd of this year, they filed a notice with the Attorney General of Massachusetts after determining an unauthorized actor was able to gain confidential patient information stored on their network. We're talking names, addresses, social security, date of birth, medical diagnosis and treatment information, health insurance information, and prescription information as well. After confirming that consumer data was leaked, they began sending out breach notices as well. So heads up, Atlantic Dialysis Management Services patients. Moving on, let's talk about Independent Living Systems, because between June 30th and July 5th of last year, they suffered a data breach that resulted in the exposure of personal information belonging to over 4 million, specifically 4,226,508 individuals. The exploitation of ILS's systems by threat actors led to the compromise of sensitive data. We're talking full names, social security, medical and health insurance details, tax ID numbers, et cetera, et cetera. Now, ILS detected this intrusion on July 5th, reported the incident to the FBI, and now they are currently facing 5 class action lawsuits as a result of the breach. Really underscores, you spend a little bit of money for defense, it really goes a long way. So heads up to you, Independent Living Systems residents, or if you've got a family member that uses Independent Living Systems, you're probably going to get paid, not a much. So moving on, let's talk about MyHeritage. If you recall, this is going back 5-6 years or so. They had a massive data breach, MyHeritage DNA, of about 90 million people worldwide. Well, we still have news on this, because a district court in Tel Aviv, Israel, just approved a 400,000 Israel new shekel, or $111,000 US settlement agreement with MyHeritage, the genealogy platform, basically due to a class action coming out of Israel. So heads up to you. I don't have more details than that. But if you're in Israel and you used MyHeritage, you're going to get some shekels. Good for you. Go get it. Moving on, let's talk about Go Anywhere MFT. This is another update. I've been doing them week to week as companies and organizations keep declaring data breaches because of Go Anywhere. This week is no different. And the two that are basically declaring right now are Down Under. And the first one is Crown Resorts. This is Australia's largest gambling and entertainment company. I don't know if they own like the Crown Plazas that we see here in the United States, but obviously they're huge in Australia. And the other one is the government of Tasmania. That's right. That plucky little island just south of the main continent of Australia is now basically declaring, due to Go Anywhere, never a fun time. So heads up, Aussies, you're not immune from these data breaches from Go Anywhere as well. Looks like the world is not. Moving on, let's talk about Capita, because computer systems have abruptly stopped working at that outsourcing group, knocking out UK's council phone lines and triggering fears that basically the company that runs crucial operations for the NHS and the UK military could be under a cyber attack. Capita staff understood that they were unable to access their IT system since the early hours of this past Friday, and an early investigation has yet to establish the cause. This outage exposes vulnerabilities of critical public services to cyber incidents in the UK, and the increasing role of outsourcing companies in delivering those services. Capita is one of the government's biggest suppliers, the UK government suppliers, with a £6.5 billion of public sector contracts spanning London's congestion charge system to recruiting soldiers for the army and on and on. And that's exactly it. We are outsourcing everything. Oh, my company internally doesn't do HR, human resources. We outsource it. You know, we don't do payroll. We outsource it. You know, our janitorial services outsource, you know, those kinds of things. But if they're holding a lot of sensitive data, especially human resources, payroll, all those things, if they're not maintaining adequate security controls and you're not getting attestations from them that they are maintaining adequate security controls, then that's obviously a very big problem. And here we are. And finally, finally, we have two finalies for you this week. The first one is ChatGPT. Now, I recently actually did a daily video / podcast on this one, but I wanted to include it here because it is considered a data breach, and here's what's going on. The country of Italy is temporarily blocking the artificial intelligence software ChatGPT in the wake of a data breach as it investigates a possible violation of the GDPR. That's the stringent European Union data protection rules, and that is according to the government's privacy watchdog this past Friday. Now, the Italian Data Protection Authority said it was taking provisional action, quote, until ChatGPT respects privacy, end quote, including temporarily limiting the company from processing Italian users' data. The agency statement cites the EU's General Data Protection Regulation, or GDPR, and noted that ChatGPT had suffered a data breach on March 20th involving, quote, users' conversations, end quote, and information about subscriber payments. That is absolutely true. It hit a very small subset of ChatGPT users, something like 1 or 2%. But nevertheless, there are a bazillion people using this platform right now. And so we're going to see where this goes. On top of this, ChatGPT, to comply with this, geo-blocked Italy, essentially from working and connecting to OpenAI systems, the owner of ChatGPT. There's nothing stopping, you know, an Italian from getting a, you know, an Italian citizen getting a VPN and then connecting to, you know, France or Spain or Switzerland or another country around there and then routing to ChatGPT. But it's down for the country if you just go as of right now. We're going to see where this goes because I think this is going to be one of the next huge horizons of privacy. We are ingesting an enormous amount of data into these large language models like ChatGPT and Google Bard. And if they are consuming this data and not holding it, storing it in proper manners, we've got a big problem on our hands, and just like we do with these social media platforms, although this is a different animal. So we're going to see where this goes. I'll let you know. And finally, and this is an interesting one because it kind of brushes up against politics. And I will say it for the umpteenth million time that cybersecurity is agnostic to politics, but we are not immune from it. I don't care what you are on the political spectrum or what you believe. Here are the facts on the ground because we have to talk about the United States' federal government publishing office because about 1,900 people whose names were in the White House visitor logs from the end of Donald J. Trump's presidency recently received letters alerting them that their social security numbers had been mistakenly posted online in January during an upload of data from the House committee investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol. In other words, the January 6th committee was uploading all of this stuff, and it unfortunately included about 1,900 Social Security numbers. Now, the letters, which were sent by the government publishing office and which recipients reported receiving within this past week, came nearly 3 months after the security breach. We're talking about this in January. It is the beginning of April right now, so here we are. Now, basically, during which the office uploaded the White House visitor logs from December of 2020, again, the end of President Trump's presidency, or term, those basically were obtained by the January 6th committee. These visitor logs contain 1,694 full Social Security numbers and 178 partial Social Security numbers, and they were online between 9:16 p.m. January 2nd, that's Eastern Time, through 11:21 a.m. Eastern on January 4th. The government publishing office, removed them shortly after being alerted to the data breach by a news outlet, obviously sifting through that data. Now, the release of personal information, which includes social security numbers of prominent Republicans. Understand, if you're on the visitor list, and this is the critical thing, you're probably a government official, or you're a high profile. You're meeting with the president of the United States. I don't care if it's Trump or Biden or Obama, and all the way back, odds are you're not like Joe the bus driver. You know, you are somebody in power or somebody with influence. And these are the social security numbers that got dumped out. And so this basically occurred as the January 6th committee was scrambling to upload the absolute voluminous data before dissolving basically their committee at the end of the last Congress. Remember, we have a new Congress sworn in the beginning of this year due to midterm elections. And so by virtue of that, the committee was wrapping it up before the last Congress's term ended. That panel had obtained logs as it scrutinized what was happening inside the White House in the run-up to the attack on the Capitol on January 6, 2021. So obviously that is never a good look for the government. I hope those individuals are notified, and by virtue of that, I hope it did not get out there, meaning some malicious attacker or, God forbid, an intelligence agency was able to grab those things and essentially run with it. So here we are. Those are your breaches of the week. It's just another crazy week, as always. Were you affected? Let me know.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the Deep Dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a Deep Dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at NickAESP. Again, that's NickAESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin.
Today, we've got to talk about TikTok once again, because TikTok bans could actually expand the security state here in the United States. I hope not. I really do. And I'm cribbing pretty heavily from two different articles, one from Responsible Statecraft by Marcus Stanley, another one from Reason by Elizabeth Nolan Brown. And I think this is an incredibly important topic that we really need to do a deep dive into, because this is something that I think needs to be separated. And if you're a longtime follower or listener of mine, then you know I've done multiple videos, I've done podcasts, I've talked about this on the radio, essentially regarding TikTok and why it actually needs to be banned. I've also done a ton of videos and podcasts and talked about it on the radio as well, warning about the expanding surveillance and security state, at least here in the United States and in other places around the world. And so, to be clear, I do not think that a ban on TikTok should also include a rise in the security state. But sadly, there are some movements in Congress that are combining these two, and we need to go through them, because two major bills that would impose sweeping restrictions on Chinese-owned software are working their way through both the House and the Senate. On top of this, TikTok's CEO, Chu Zichu, was recently brought before the House Commerce Committee for hostile questioning. I did a video/podcast on that, on what an absolute joke that was. Clearly, none of the members of Congress really seemed to understand technology or did real research on TikTok and the issues that we've uncovered over the years prior to the questioning of TikTok's CEO. The executive branch, meaning the president of the United States, in this case, Biden, is also seeking to force ByteDance, owner of TikTok, to sell that app to an American owner against Chinese opposition. These are raising alarms about Chinese ownership of TikTok, and they cite invasive surveillance practices, privacy violations created by excessive data collection and exploitation of user data, addictive design features, harmful content, and on and on. I agree with all of that. This is a huge problem. But, and according to this article, and I think this is a really good point, all of these disturbing characteristics are also ubiquitous features of American-owned big tech apps, ranging from Google to Facebook to Instagram, and were in many ways pioneered by Silicon Valley. And I think that's a good point. But there are this argument, though, consistently misses some key points. Now, of course, our data is out there. If you've been on Facebook for any amount of time, you have been data mined. That data has been sold over and over and over. That's something that, you know, that's a horse we're not going to put back in the barn. But we have recourse under U.S. law to combat that in a way we don't with China. And we will talk about that in a little bit, because in the case of TikTok, the claim is that Chinese ownership makes these problems particularly harmful because Chinese intelligence services can access user data and technology owned by Chinese companies like ByteDance. And that is 100% true. A 2017 law in the People's Republic of China basically said if you are a Chinese-based company and you have information on foreigners, in this case, aka Americans, you are required by law to give the Chinese government access to that. Some people also go further by claiming that TikTok could be used to compromise the security of devices on which they've been installed. And yes, that is true as well. We have had two independent outfits, Internet 2.0 out of Australia and another independent researcher, basically reverse engineering TikTok and essentially have proved that in the last few years as well. So with that, this is the backdrop because an examination of those two TikTok bills really raises more questions. Is TikTok being used as a wedge for a much broader effort to restrict companies owned by rival nations across the entire information technology sector? And does this threaten American civil liberties and risk of government overreach? Those are very valid questions. So HR, or House Bill 1153, known as the Data Act, which recently passed the House Foreign Affairs Committee, is pretty surreal in its implications. Section 102 of that bill, for example, oriented towards penalties on U.S. citizens, would require the Secretary of the Treasury to ban any U.S. financial transactions by any American who had knowingly transferred sensitive personal information to any entity owned or even, quote, subject to the influence of, end quote, China. Since the definition of, quote, sensitive personal information, end quote, is very broad, this could mean that any company or individual who had, for example, forwarded emails or shared health insurance information with a company that even has partial Chinese ownership could find themselves banned from financial transactions. Their assets could be frozen under this law, for example, and they'd be unable to use things like credit cards, access cash from their bank accounts, all these kinds of things. Title II of the bill focuses on foreign jurisdictions. It would require the U.S. government to freeze all U.S. assets of a foreign person anywhere in the world who, quote, operates, directs, or otherwise deals in, end quote, a connected software application that is Chinese-owned or, quote, subject to the influence of, end quote, China, if such software facilitates Chinese military surveillance or censorship activities or involves Chinese access to recommendation algorithms that could manipulate content. This broadly, just super broad prohibition connected to extreme penalties would in effect make it a priority of the U.S. government to try and ban much of the Chinese software anywhere in the world, including nations that are allies or potential allies. That bill, though, interestingly enough, due to all of these holes that have been poked in it and these questions on civil liberties and just how vast this is not as likely to pass as the next one we're going to talk about. And that's the one in the Senate, Bill 686, the Restrict Act. You might have heard of this one. This is essentially the Senate's TikTok bill, and this has a lot of momentum towards passaging. Now, 686 has 21 bipartisan co-sponsors and has been endorsed by the Biden administration. This bill would grant the executive branch unprecedented new national security powers over commerce and information and communication technologies, and therefore, by extension, our speech. Now, the Restrict Act requires the executive branch to prohibit or otherwise, quote unquote, mitigate any transaction or activity in information and communication technologies by companies controlled by a foreign adversary if the secretary determines that such a transaction poses any risk to U.S. national security. The bill grants the president a wide range of civil and criminal options to enforce these mitigations, including forced divestment of assets, seizure of assets, subpoenas for information, and more. Under Section 12 of this bill, legal avenues to contest such actions are limited to rapid and direct constitutional challenges in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, obviously in Washington, D.C. The initial list, for the record, of foreign adversaries is China, Cuba, Russia, Iran, Venezuela, and North Korea. The executive branch could add additional foreign adversaries at will, according to the bill. This choice could only be overridden by a majority vote in both houses of the Congress. While these powers would be discretionary and could theoretically be used in a restrained and measured way, how do we guarantee that? In effect, this bill could ban or would ban ownership of any widely used information and communications technology within the United States' market by foreign nations viewed as adversaries to the United States. And for the record, we're all not going out and installing usually Chinese-owned apps or North Korean-created apps and all of that. But to be perfectly honest, most people don't even check. Oh, that's a really cool-looking game. That's a really cool-looking app. And boom, it's made in China or it's made in another country that's adversarial. That in some way, shape, or form could be giving or increasing surveillance, data mining, whatever. At the very least, these technologies could be subject to censorship at will, according to this bill. They could have a significant ramification, both internationally and domestically, if this comes to fruition. We may see retaliatory bans of U.S. software and communications technology in foreign countries targeted at its adversary nations, possibly the beginning of the division of the world into rival information technology spheres protected by the great firewalls like the one they have in China. We're already seeing a bifurcation of the internet. I wrote an article on that back in 2018 for Forbes. So this is coming. Software would be the next logical choice, not to mention generative AIs and LLMs like the chat GPTs of the world. I just did a video slash podcast on that one the other day regarding it being banned in Italy due to privacy. Now, domestically, Section 11 of this bill, the Restrict Act, establishes essentially draconian penalties for American citizens who violate it by attempting to evade or help others evade new restrictions on foreign-owned information and communication technologies. Now, that is a bit ambiguous with how far this could go, but it could lead to American citizens being prosecuted for accessing information on foreign-owned technology platforms, such as WeChat. We have many people here that have originally come from China that are now U.S. citizens that use WeChat, which is a Chinese-based messaging app to talk to family and friends back in their home country. The language describing who the Restrict Act applies to is also confusing at best. The Commerce Secretary would be authorized to take steps to address risks posed by, quote, any covered transaction by any person. But what counts as a covered transaction? The bill states that this means a, quote, transaction in which an entity described in subparagraph B has any interest, end quote. Entities described in subparagraph B are a, quote, foreign adversary, an entity subject to the jurisdiction of or organized under the laws of a foreign adversary, an entity owned, directed, or controlled by either of those foreign adversaries, for the record, can, quote, be any foreign government or regime, end quote, that the secretary deems a national security threat. It is a bit of a mess in the wording, but this could simply apply, or I should say imply, that any person using a VPN, a virtual private network, for example, something I have on my phone and I use regularly, that basically accesses an app controlled by a foreign adversary, or it's subject to basically the secretary's whim. Meaning I use my VPN, I access software in some way, shape, or form. Maybe it's WeChat because, you know, I'm an American citizen, but, my family's in China, and now I'm contacting and communicating with them in China. So by virtue of that, anyone using a VPN to access TikTok could be in trouble, specifically subjected to up to a $1 million fine, 20 years in prison, or both. That's crazy. Now, on top of all of this, the Restrict Act doesn't just state that, quote, no person may engage in any conduct prohibited by or contrary to its provisions, end quote. It also says, and I quote, no person shall cause or aid, abet, counsel, command, induce, procure, permit, or approve the doing of any act prohibited by or the omission of any act required by any regulation, order, direction, mitigation measure, prohibition, or other authorization or directive issued under this act. In addition, and I quote again, no person may solicit or attempt a violation, and no person may engage in any transaction or take any other action with intent to evade the provisions of this law. End quote. Now, that language leaves even more room for the Restrict Act to basically touch a wide range of activities. Perhaps a court would ultimately deem it unusable against individuals merely trying to evade a TikTok ban, but that doesn't mean prosecutors wouldn't try, nor that authorities wouldn't use invasive surveillance measures to try and detect such invasion, meaning we would be surveilled even more. If I have a VPN on my phone, and suddenly Verizon or AT&T or any one of the mobile carriers, you know, whichever one I use, whichever one you use, says, wait a second, we're not seeing traffic go to websites or out of apps. All we're seeing is VPN traffic. Does that suddenly, you know, ring an alarm in the government and now I'm being surveilled and they are going after, let's say, my VPN provider to say, hey, you know, what is Nick doing online? Is he going to TikTok? Is he doing something else? Now, as I stated right out of the gate, given all that we know about TikTok, I think TikTok needs to be banned. But here's my proposal on this one. TikTok should be banned because of its ability to surveil and data mine, but it should also be banned because it's a public health risk. And ask yourself this question. Why does China restrict their version of TikTok to 40 minutes a day for minors and prioritize educational content? And the mere fact that they can prioritize something for their viewers shows that they can make anything go viral, including disinformation or information that is positive about the Chinese government and negative about the United States, thus influencing an entire population. And here's why. Because they know, the Chinese government knows, it can be addictive, so they let their adversaries, minors, have it for unlimited time, and only recently, due to scrutiny and calls for bans like we're talking about here, did they actually cap the time that minors, for example, here in the United States, can be on the app. But still, they haven't prioritized educational content. It's still stupid challenges and ridiculous dances. But what about Facebook, Nick? That's a question I get all the time. Yeah, they're a problem too. I've talked about that consistently, whether it's on the radio and video and podcast. The only saving grace that we have here is that since they're American company, we have recourse under U.S. law. Now, the data genie may be out of the bottle. There's no way we're going to get our data back because they've sold it a million times over, but we can sue them and start reversing that tide more easily than we can TikTok. Try suing the Chinese government. Good luck. You're going nowhere. You're not even getting a court date. On top of this, I also think that every single app that we have on iPhone, Android, whatever, should be forced to disclose what data they are taking and who they are giving it to every time the app is opened. And they should be fined billions of dollars. And I mean billions of dollars if they fail to live up to that. And when you look at the Facebooks of the world, they are set up to know they are violating law because they have massive buckets where they put money on, where they expect to pay things like GDPR violations in Europe, others like CCPA violations in the state of California, and on and on.
And thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show, and I think we covered a lot of really good stuff, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a really good time, and I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A. ESP. Again, that's Nick A. ESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.